Welcome in, sports fans, to this finally Friday edition of The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, an ESPN Pensacola podcast. Got a lot of crazy things to talk about on today's show, one including the NFL in Brazil. We'll get to that a little later. I want to start today's show with the Celtics dominating Game 1 of the NBA Finals against the Dallas Mavericks. They get the win there, 107-89, just a full-on dominant win there, 18-point win for them. Started the game off in that first quarter, really set the tone at the end of the first quarter, 23-5 run for Boston to help kind of pad their lead there. Dallas did a good job of fighting back in it, brought it back down within an 8-point game in the third quarter, but then another 14-0 run. Really, the story of this game was the runs by Boston. The 23-5 run at the end of the first quarter, the 14-0 run in the third quarter really kind of set the tone. Even Jaylen Brown after the game was talking about that 14-0 run in the third quarter. He said, that's when the game started for us. Once we got to that point, we had that 8-point lead, then we go on that 14-0 run, we stretched the lead like that. That's when we kind of knew, okay, let's focus in, let's finish this off. We've got them where we want them. Let's keep our foot on their throat and close this out and take game one. So you look at this game was played out a lot like the regular season matchup between these two teams because Dallas got embarrassed against the Celtics earlier in the regular season. And because of that, Jason Kidd made some decisions to change some things up defensively to try to slow down this Boston offense. It worked playing everybody else in the league, but we saw last night it didn't really slow down the Boston offense as Jaylen Brown had 25 points, Jason Tatum had 16 points, and Kristaps Porzingis coming off the bench. I talked about how he might be a little rusty. It might take him a little while to get into the rhythm. Yeah, no, it didn't. The guy had 20 points, 18 of those 20 coming in the first half. The guy played out of his mind. He was a monster last night for the Boston Celtics coming off the bench. And I think it just bolsters and makes the Celtics that much even better whenever he is on the floor for them. He hasn't played since, I think, April 28th, around in there was the last time he was playing on a court for the Celtics in a playoff game. So he had to sit out all that time. Lots of people talking about, would he be rusty? Would he be tired? Would there be some, conditioning issues? Because he had to sit out from an injury that was a lower body leg injury for quite some time. So what's his conditioning going to be like? Did not seem to be a problem. Porzingis just dominating last night was a force of nature. Also, the Boston defense, talk about Porzingis dominating. The Boston defense dominated. You realize that Dallas, in that game last night, Dallas did not score 25 points in any quarter. That is actually kind of one of those stats where it's a very telling stat for this game. You don't really think about it, and you don't really look at it on the landscape of how much a team scores per quarter, really. You look at maybe per game, but you don't look at per quarter. But the fact that they were held under 25 points in every quarter in game one speaks to the dominance of that Boston defense, right? So Jason Kidd made all those adjustments to try to help the Mavericks defense so that they could potentially slow down because you're not going to stop this Boston offense. You slow it down, but you're not going to stop it. He made those changes to hope to do that. It clearly did not work last night with Jaylen Brown and Porzingis both being 20 points or more and Jason Tatum with 16 points. Those guys still were able to find their points, find their shots, and get to those openings throughout the night against that Dallas defense. But really, the conversation of last night, Boston, their defense, just shutting down Luka and Kyrie. Luka did have 30 points, yes. But think about if Luka didn't have those 30 points, how much worse this game would have been. How much more lopsided this game would have been. The Celtics were impressive in game one. And not just talking about Porzingis, the entire team. We talked about with Porzingis, yes, would there be any rust issues? But also with the Celtics, would there be rust issues? Would there be a little bit of a hangover from having to sit and wait for so long? Because remember, they wrapped up the Eastern Conference Finals before Dallas wrapped up the Western Conference. They had zero problems last night. I'm telling you, this Boston team is on a mission. I know I said Boston in six, but with the way they played last night, if they play with that level of play each and every game of the NBA Finals, and they shut down Dallas like they did each and every game of the NBA Finals, this might be a sweep. I'm still going to stick with my original prediction of Boston in six. But based off of the way Boston played last night and how they just completely shut down Dallas, how they dominated, how whenever Dallas even got some rhythm, Boston put their foot back on their throat and went on a run, much like we saw in the third quarter. Dallas cuts the lead down to 8. They go on that 14-0 run to get the lead back. Boston is a legitimate team that has a mission in mind, and that mission is winning an NBA title. And I think they're going to have a great opportunity to do that if they play like they did last night. So we'll have to keep watching. Game 2 coming up. I think Dallas has got to win Game 2. Because if Boston comes out and dominates Game 2 like they did Game 1, again, like I said, we could be looking at a potential sweep for the NBA Finals. Keep it in the NBA now. Adam Silver kind of was addressing some things for the league moving forward. They're working on the TV rights deals and things like that. And he said the next thing we're looking at is actually expanding past 30 teams, which I thought was interesting. Right? Because, I mean, you talk about the NFL. There's a couple of places you could bring up and talk about that maybe don't have a team that could use a team. There's a couple of places with the NHL, Atlanta being one of them. You know, they lost the Thrashers a few years ago. You could bring them back, right? Bring them back on the ice there in the ATL. So Major League Baseball's talked about it, but it looks like the NBA really going to try to move forward with expanding the league. It's not going to be something that happens within the next couple of years, but Adam Silver said there is a lot of interest towards the NBA with expanding. And I thought it was, I think it's a great idea. It'd be great to have a couple more teams inside the NBA. Now, Adam Silver does worry about spreading the talent too thin across the board if you add too many teams. So I don't think we'll see more than 2 teams added into the NBA. But again, the possible places, and he even said, you know, we look at teams outside of the USA, right? We've got the Raptors in Toronto, right? We can look at some other places in Canada. We can look at places south of the border. I don't think they would probably go. I know the NBA and basketball is massive in like China and Japan. I don't think they would go that far, but definitely south of the border, north of the border. They could potentially add another team there. But as far as here in the States, I was thinking about who would be that team? What would be a great place where you could add a team from the NBA? I got a list here of 5 places where we could potentially have an NBA team if the NBA does decide to expand, which it seems like from Adam Silver, that's exactly what they're planning on doing. First and foremost, San Diego. It's where the Clippers originated from before they moved to LA. You know, they were the San Diego Clippers before they were the Los Angeles Clippers. San Diego still has the Padres. Yes, they lost the Chargers, but they still have the Padres. Give them another sport in that city. You know, it plays off of baseball. It happens in the time of year that baseball is not happening. So you don't have to worry about the two teams competing with each other. You'd have to build a brand new arena, but I'm sure that they can probably find some space in San Diego for that. But I think having an NBA team in San Diego, look, you've got teams, you've got multiple teams in Northern California. You've got a couple of different teams in LA. Let's go ahead and throw San Diego in there. Just completely cover the entire state. Why not? Works for Major League Baseball. You've got the Padres and you've got the Dodgers and the Angels. Then you've got the Giants. If you can have that inside California for Major League Baseball, you could do it with the NBA too. So I think San Diego could be a potential great place for an expansion team inside the NBA. Vegas. Yeah, Vegas, the hot name right now in sports, right? They get the Vegas Knights. Then the Raiders move from Oakland. And LA, they move out from California to Vegas. Looks like the Oakland Athletics are going to be moving out to Las Vegas and completely changing the look of that franchise. So Vegas is that hot place in all of sports, right? I think it'd be a great place for an NBA team. How about Tampa, right? You've already got Amalia Arena where the Tampa Bay Lightning play. You use that arena for NCAA tournaments and things like that, so you know you can fit it for an NBA game. You know it's capable. You know it can work. So that would be another great destination, right? You've got the Lightning, you've got the Bucks, you've got the Rays. Let's go ahead and add an NBA team to the lineup, right? Maybe give them like a shark theme mascot, something like that. The Tampa Tiger Sharks. I don't know. You come up with that down the road. But I think Tampa could be a great place to, you could even tie it into maybe Ybor City, where they have that history of making cigars, and find some way to, you know, make the mascot something that kind of shows homage to that. I think Tampa's another great place. Houston, another place. Again, you talk about the NBA. You got the San Antonio Spurs. You got the Dallas Mavericks. Two great historic teams inside the NBA Finals. One of them's playing for the NBA championship right now against the Celtics. Why not add something in Houston? You got the Texans. You got the Astros. It's a pro sports town. Seattle, that's another one. Seattle, of course, home for the Supersonics for so long. What did that dissolve in 2007, 2008, somewhere around in there? They haven't had a basketball team there in the NBA since. So what about Seattle Supersonics? Maybe not call them Supersonics. You completely rebrand them, completely come up with a different name. But I think Seattle could be another great place for an NBA expansion team if they do, in fact, expand. And there's several other cities that you could talk about. I mean, I think, look, if Jacksonville wanted to throw their hat in the ring, I think Jacksonville could be an interesting choice. You talk about continuing on. Nashville could be an interesting choice. They've got the Titans there in Nashville. You look through the state of Georgia outside of Atlanta. There's really no other place for the team to go. Atlanta already has an NBA team. Alabama, maybe Birmingham. Maybe Birmingham. I don't know if Birmingham is big enough for an NBA team, right? They have the Birmingham Bulls in the SPHL, play our very own Pensacola Ice Flyers. I don't know if Birmingham, they have UAB, they have the UFL, who's, by the way, the Birmingham Stallions are going to be playing for the UFL championship later on this weekend. I just don't know if it's a big enough market that the NBA would want to look there. Same's the case for places in Mississippi, Louisiana, New Orleans already has an NBA team. So there is kind of a limited number of places that the NBA could possibly look, especially if they're wanting to add a couple of different teams, without probably getting out into these middle of nowhere places. Maybe Kansas City, right? Maybe have something in Kansas City to where it's kind of a partner deal to where building that arena, and it's also an indoor football stadium for the Kansas City Chiefs, maybe. I don't know. I don't know how you could make that work, but that could be potential remedy to that solution there that they're dealing with building a new stadium for the Chiefs. So, I mean, that could work. St. Louis, another place you could probably put an NBA team. So there's plenty of places, I think. It's not a short list. I gave five right there, but I think there are a few more that you could add to it. I don't think the NBA would have problem finding a place. I mean, if this was a bigger sports market here in Pensacola, I'd say, hey, Pensacola, let's put them in the Bay Center. But I think we're more suited for like a G League team. And I still think that that's something that should happen with Pensacola. I still feel like the Pensacola G League team should definitely still be a thing. So if there is an opportunity out there for that, and somebody that makes those decisions is listening, that's just my two cents. I think it would be great to have a G League team here if the NBA wanted to go that route. But I'm excited to see what happens with this expansion. I'm excited to see. I know Major League Baseball is looking at expansion. It could potentially have a team in Orlando to go with the Rays and the Marlins. So I'm definitely looking forward to these leagues expanding and adding new teams and creating new fan bases. Just don't do it like the NHL did with Arizona this past season. That was a raw deal. That was not a good deal by the NHL. They definitely fumbled the bag on that one for sure. So if you do it right and you don't offend any fan bases or, you know, screw over any organizations that are already withstanding inside your league, I'm all for you expanding and adding some new teams. Let's move now to the NFL, because Josh Jacobs was on a podcast And man, if he didn't make some interesting comments about the NFL and the upcoming trip to Brazil for the game between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Green Bay Packers. He was talking about this game and he said, look, the NFL came to us and said, you can't wear green. Apparently it's related somehow to gang violence there in Brazil. You can't wear green. The messed up thing about that is the Packers and the Eagles, what are their main colors? A green, right? So I don't know how, I guess they both will wear their away jerseys. Maybe Philadelphia will develop an all-white helmet with the wings on it to wear. Because, you know, their helmet, whether it's the throwback in the Kelly green or it's the dark green, it's green either way. So apparently they're not allowed to wear green. And I don't know if that transitioned, because Josh Jacobs was talking about this and didn't really say if it transitioned to like wearing the uniform on the field for the game or just being out in public in Brazil for the game. But he also talked about how, aside from being told that they can't wear green because of the gang violence, apparently something having to do with that. I don't know. I guess it's kind of like with, like, you know, how we have, like, you know, was it the Bloods and the Crips with blue and red? I guess it's kind of the same thing down there. Maybe there's a gang that their predominant color is green. So if somebody was out in public wearing green, maybe somebody might see that and think that they're part of that and shoot at them. Or I don't know. I don't know the full story. I'm just going off of what Josh Jacobs said on this podcast. He also said that the teams probably weren't being allowed to leave the hotel room except for to go to the game. Which, for anybody going, well, how are they going to practice? Teams do walk through practices all the time in hotel rooms. So they could get into the conference room of the hotel or whatever, you know, book them in a hotel room where they know there's a conference room big enough for the team to do a practice in, and they can still practice inside the hotel. So that's not really an issue there. But yeah, it sounds like from what else Josh Jacobs was saying in this interview, that the teams are not going to be allowed to leave the hotel until it's time to go play the game. And then when they do, they will have to have help transporting and getting to the game through armored vehicles. Like, that's how bad it is in Brazil. At least that's what Josh Jacobs is saying, that the NFL is telling these two teams. Could there be some exaggeration on Josh Jacobs' part? Absolutely. Yeah, there could be. But at the same time, if you know how kind of dangerous things are down in Brazil, especially around Rio, I mean, go back to when the World Cup was there a few years ago. I mean, how many people were getting robbed? And wasn't there actually a player for one of the national teams that got robbed? And didn't he get, like, pistol whipped or something on the sidewalk just walking home from the game or walking to a game? Something along those lines. So, yeah, it's not necessarily the safest place to be. But, man, hearing all this, if this stuff that Josh Jacobs is saying is true, I got to sit here and I got to wonder why the NFL even is bothering playing a game in Brazil to begin with. If you know going in it's going to be this bad, why are you putting your players and your coaches at safety risk, you know, their life at risk? Their safety is not a guarantee if you do this, right? What about the fans that'll travel down there for the game? What about the media that will travel down and cover the game? Because there will be media from Green Bay and Philadelphia that travel down to cover it. So you're just wanting all of those people to go down to this dangerous area. And you want to give them the guidelines of, oh, stay in the hotel until it's time to leave for the game. And don't wear green. So does that actually work for the fans too? Like, are the fans just supposed to not wear green for two teams in the NFL whose predominant color is green? Does that work for the media too, where they have to stay in the hotel until it's time to leave to go to the stadium? Go from the airport to the hotel, from the hotel to the stadium, from the stadium back to the hotel, hotel to the airport? You're putting a lot of people's safety at risk if it's really as dangerous as Josh Jacobs is playing it out to be in this podcast interview he gave. Why are you even playing a game down there if you're the NFL? Of all the places you could have gone and played a game, if you're that worried about people's safety, Why are you still trying to go down there and play? It just doesn't make sense to me. Although, let's be honest, there's a lot that Roger Goodell does that doesn't make sense to me. But that's neither here nor there. Looks like Lakers and Dan Hurley are going to be meeting in person a little later on today. Both sides going to be discussing that contract. So it looks like the Lakers pretty much have their guy in place. There's lots of mutual interest between the Lakers and Dan Hurley. And yeah, I think this is a great pairing. We talked about it in depth on yesterday's show. So you can go back to episode 27 and listen to that and kind of hear going into depth of what I feel like Dan Hurley could bring to the table for the Lakers. But I think it's a great pair. I think he could do a lot of good for this Lakers team because, look, if LeBron decides to opt out and goes and signs somewhere else, they're going to look to be a little bit of a younger team. Dan Hurley is great at developing young talent. So, and even if LeBron stays, I think Dan Hurley and LeBron could have something pretty dynamic, especially if they add a key piece in the offseason like a Paul George or something like that. It definitely could be interesting to watch. You talk about a team that would have D'Angelo Russell, Paul George, LeBron James, Anthony Davis. I mean, that's a talented roster right there. If that's four of your starting five, whoo, you got a pretty darn good team right there, especially you throw in a guy like Dan Hurley in the mix to be your head coach. So we'll see. It looks like there's no official word on when a deal could get done. There's nothing from Wojciechowski or Brian Windhorst from ESPN on when a deal could get done. But I mean, obviously, if Dan Hurley's flying to LA and they're both sides are mutually interested and they're discussing contract, I mean, I would say by the end of the weekend, by the time we hit Monday, could be a very real possibility that when the Monday edition of the Glass Half Full rolls around, we would be talking about Dan Hurley being the new head coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. It could happen, and if it does, we'll definitely talk about it. Hey, congratulations to the Oklahoma Sooners, their final year in the Big 12. They took care of business not only in that conference, but throughout the regional, super regional, and now the College World Series for softball. They knocked out Texas to win, get this, their fourth natty in a row. Four in a row. That is a team and a program that is on fire right there in Oklahoma. So congratulations to the Sooners. They'll be added to the SEC for softball next season. So football really going to be the first sport that gets kicked off with Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC. Then once basketball season starts, baseball, softball after that, we'll add those guys in throughout the conference. So definitely going to be interesting to see how Oklahoma plays next year, because they're coming to a conference that's pretty top-heavy when it comes to softball. I mean, you're talking about teams like Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, all top-tier programs when it comes to softball inside the country, not just the SEC, but the entire country. So adding Oklahoma to that, and even adding Texas, because Texas is the team that they beat for the College World Series for the softball. So definitely looking forward to having them both in the conference and making it even tougher conference. I actually heard somebody on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday say next year for the Women's College World Series, there's a very real chance that all eight teams are from the SEC. And they may not be wrong on that, right? Because you got Oklahoma, Texas, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia. There's six right there. If you get a couple of other teams that step up and play better next year, there's a very real possibility that the Women's College World Series for softball next year could be all SEC. That's just how deep of a conference that is when it comes to softball. So we'll look into the future there and get ready for some great games and great matchups. Oklahoma and Texas join in, you know, get regular battles between Oklahoma and Florida, which that's kind of turned out to be a nice little rivalry through the Women's College World Series. So that can start playing over into SEC play. It's going to be fun. Definitely looking forward to that. Some bad news if you're a Yankees fan. Looks like Juan Soto left last night's game against the Twins. Had a little discomfort in his forearm. He's going to go get some imaging today to see the severity of it. Looks like people were talking about it last night in different press conferences, different shows and everything. Don't really know if he's going to miss any time. If he does miss time, how long is he going to miss? You know, there's really no kind of official word right now. We won't know until we get the results back from the, like I said, the imaging that he's going to have done later on today. So whatever happens there, I know if you're a Yankee fan, you got to be looking at this going, oh, Here we go again. Just when we're playing really good baseball, Juan Soto goes down with an injury. The guy who's playing best baseball for us this entire season is going down with an injury. Because, I mean, that's the way it's been the last couple of seasons for them, right? Whether it's been Judge, whether it's been Stanton, now Juan Soto. That's just how it's been for the Yankees. They're a good baseball team, but they can't stay healthy. And because of that, that's what's cost them the last few seasons. They were finally looking like they were going to be able to stay healthy. Now Juan Soto leaves this game. Again, we'll have to see just the severity of this forearm injury. They'll do those x-rays and MRIs or CAT scans or whatever they're going to do. I'm not a sports medicine person, so I don't know what all they're going to do to look at it. But they'll look at it, see if they can find out what's going on in there, see if it's something that needs to be corrected by intervention through surgery or something like that, or just give him a couple of days of rest and let it heal on its own. So we'll see what happens. I'm sure that news will probably break a little later on today. And that means we will probably talk about it more in depth on Monday's Glass Half Full. You can also keep an eye on our social media pages, facebook.com/ESPN Pensacola, and also on Instagram at ESPN Pensacola as well. Follow us on there. We'll post all throughout the weekend. And like I said, if Juan Soto's out for an extended period of time, we'll definitely post it there. We'll definitely talk about it right here on the Glass Half Full. That is going to do it for today. Hey, you have a great weekend, all right? I will talk to you on Monday. It's the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, on ESPN Pensacola Podcast.